How is everybody doing? And welcome back for another Strength Chat episode. Today, I have got a very special guest with you. Today, I'm joined by someone who's got a PhD in psychology. She's also a certified health and fitness coach. Today, I'm joined by the one and only Casey Orvidas. How are you doing?
I'm good. Such a solid intro. Thank you.
I know. I'm trying to get scouted as a commentator, I think. See if I can be as an announcer.
I could see it.
How are you? What's been happening in your world recently?
What's been happening? Gosh, I feel like a lot. I just got back from Austin, Texas this past weekend at a speaking event. This is my third or fourth speaking engagement in the last like 3 months. It's been a lot. And then also in a couple weeks, I'm hosting my own event. I will be a speaker there like pretty much the whole day. So lots of speaking recently, I feel like. But other than that, things have been good, trucking along in all the other areas of my work.
Oh, nice. I know obviously people are probably sick of me asking or hearing about it, but obviously with COVID, everything, you know, a lot more things were online in terms of rather than speaking in person and, you know, speaking in over the last couple of months. Have you found that that's picked up a little bit more or have you got back into the routine of that a little bit?
Yeah, I would say probably starting like late last year, I think my first like back on stage event was August of 2021, I think. So, and since then I had, December, I had February, I had a March and I had April. And then we're hosting one, me and my boyfriend, Sam, May. So, I would say it's pretty much back to normal as far as that goes. I'm sure there are a handful of people who still don't feel comfortable traveling. And it may be one of those things, you know, where we would have more people at these events if it was like 3 years ago, prior to the pandemic, but seems pretty good so far.
Oh, cool. Plenty of things to keep you busy then. I know I did a brief introduction there, but for everyone listening who might not know your background in coaching, in obviously mentioning their PhD in psychology, just want to give a little bit of a background to yourself and how you sort of got involved in the area of your career so far, if you like.
Yeah, for sure. So I tend to describe myself as sort of half fitness coach, half psychologist, and I do everything that I do pretty much like blends those two worlds together. So I own a one-on-one health and fitness coaching company called KJO Coaching. I have 5 amazing assistant coaches on staff over there, and we are health and fitness coaches, but we specialize in mindset and behavior change and aspects of psychology. So that's sort of like our claim to fame, something that is a little bit different and special about us at KJO. And then the other half of my business, I coach other coaches. So I have a certification called the Health Mindset Coaching Certification. We've had over 300 coaches go through it so far since starting it in 2020. And it's like my baby. I love it so much. It's so much fun. That's actually the call that I have right after this, is to jump on one of those weekly calls where I essentially walk coaches, health and fitness coaches, also health and fitness professionals in general. We've had some doctors, nurses, that sort of thing, go through the program as well. 13 weeks, we chat every single week. We walk through foundations of behavior change and psychology. We talk about mindset and habit and motivation, communication skills, things like that, all from an evidence-based place in psychology. So I do that. Those are my two main things, and do a lot of, you know, speaking events. I'm writing a book, lots of little things in between. But how I got into this specific area, sort of blending psychology and health and fitness, in college, I got very, very interested in strength training and learning just how great taking care of my body and caring about myself like actually can feel. I went from literally like your typical binge drinker from like Thursday through Sunday as like a sophomore in college to like starting my junior, senior year, getting really, really into the health and fitness space and recognizing how much more confident, how much more empowered I would feel just getting into strength training, understanding nutrition, and sort of just like taking control of those aspects of my life. At the time, I was a psychology student in college and wasn't really sure what direction I wanted to end up going after I got my degree. And because I got so interested in health and fitness, and what's cool about psychology is that it really is like in some way, like form or fashion in every area of our life, right? It's very broad. It's everywhere. It's from advertising to communication, to marketing, to criminology. It's everywhere, right? So my goal then was like, okay, so if I love health and fitness so much and I love psychology so much, how do I actually get to do this, you know, in the future for my career? What could that look like? And I'd also for myself personally realized just how amazing like strength training and understanding nutrition and all this stuff has really like made me feel and benefited my life. And I wanted to figure out how to get people to do more of it because it was very clear, and it still is clear today, that everyone understands to some degree that they should be exercising, eating healthy, but so many people are not doing it. So what is it? You know, it's not just education at this point. There's something else going on there and likely something psychological, right? So that's what I kind of went to grad school to attempt to answer, is essentially how do we get people to do more of this stuff and enjoy this stuff and keep up with this stuff, because it could really truly change their lives. Not sure I have like a total exact put together answer for you, even after nearly 5 years studying this stuff. But kind of fast forward, I went to NC State for my graduate degree. I have a PhD in psychology now, and I spent close to 5 years in the mindset lab, specifically at NC State, researching growth versus fixed mindset and how that plays a role in how healthy we eat, how often we exercise, and just generally kind of diving into the world of health behavior change. So yeah, that's kind of like my background, my education, and what led me to what my business looks like today.
Cool. It's interesting you mentioned there, especially, you know, mentioning psychology, that it has an impact in everything. And especially when you said about sort of, you know, criminology as well. There's a woman who started training at the gym who's studying to be, she's actually studying psychology. So it's one of those things where, you know, some of the things that she's been learning, I learned when I did, you know, I did sport and exercise science at uni, and, you know, did sport psychology. And it's interesting exactly how you say it can impact everything, or, you know, you can have touch points through there. One thing, obviously, especially with the mentorship side of things, because with the coaching, was the mentorship something that you naturally wanted to gravitate towards, mm-hmm. you know, working with, you mentioned there, working with other coaches, working with doctors, was that something that was a natural progression? Because you always see, probably from a coach's point of view rather than a client's point of view, how do you go from coaching clients to then other people within your field, if you like?
Yeah. So for me, it was one of those things. And I think I've heard, you know, a lot of other, like, for instance, my boyfriend, Sam, he did a lot of that. He was like coaching in the trenches for many, many years before he decided he was going to kind of transition to coaching other coaches. And he is more on the physiology, metabolism, hormone science side of things, where I'm on the psychology side of things, right? So that's often the general trajectory, is like you coach for a while until maybe you realize, yeah, I want to be a business coach, or, you know, I want to teach on some of these aspects that I'm so passionate about within coaching to other coaches. And I followed somewhat of a trajectory in that fashion, but a little bit different, because I have been coaching individuals in nutrition and fitness for about 6 years, maybe a little bit more at this point. And did that through grad school as I was getting my PhD. And that was sort of just like a side hustle for me then. And I didn't necessarily see it as ever being something full time. Here we are, I'm doing essentially that full time, but I'm not doing a whole lot of like one-to-one health and fitness coaching anymore. That's a lot on my team. And I just mentor my team at this point and mentor other coaches, right? So when I decided to like take the leap and go full time into my business after getting my PhD, I was very, very adamant about not just coaching, and actually utilizing these skills I have within psychology and my research background, my academic background, to help other coaches understand, you know, these aspects of mindset and behavior change in psychology, so that they can use it with their clients. And I'm not just over here essentially like saving it all for myself, right? Yeah. So it was one of those things where I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to bet on myself and dive in full time into my own business, be a business owner, do the things, I don't want to just coach. I want to do more. I want to have, you know, and not necessarily, I didn't think, you know, oh, I want this health mindset coaching certification to come to life, but I knew I wanted some sort of program for coaches to learn from me. So it was very much like, as soon as I got serious about coaching in some regard and made it more than something that's just like a part-time thing while I was in grad school, it was top of mind for sure. It's like, I need to do something like this.
Yeah. I think that's especially, you know, with the program that you've mentioned there, that's one thing that, especially when you're learning, putting something out into the, I don't know, you'd say industry or the coaching service, if you like, that's just going to benefit it, because that moves quite nicely onto, you know, probably every coach, every client listening has had that conversation of, I really struggle with my mindset. Literally had a call with a client yesterday. I have this mindset of I'm all right for so long, and then I fall off the wagon. And the first question that I kind of wanted to ask is, obviously, you know, straddling those two worlds, if you like, of the psychology and also sort of in the trenches training in the gym, what have you found that coaches sometimes struggle with in terms of talking and coaching actually clients through mindset, and kind of what's your probably starting approach when you're first sitting down with a client? Because I'm sure, you know, everyone listening, like I said, I've had that conversation of, oh, I just struggle with this mindset, or I've got this type of mindset, if all that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And it is interesting because I feel like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, you would not be sitting here asking me that question. You know, mindset in general has become just very popular in general, just the idea of it. I think as people move towards just like more self-awareness and interest in personal development and all of this stuff, which is great for me, right? Because I'm over here, like, I, you know, spent 5 years in the mindset lab researching this stuff. But at the same time, it does lead to a lot of like just misinformation or just like lack of understanding around what mindset even really is. And I'm sure you could walk down the street and ask someone, you know, what they think mindset is, and if ask them if they think that there's a science to it, and they would be like, no. You know, so I mean, I didn't even realize that until I went to grad school, that like, wow, there's actually a science to mindset. But that does lead to a lot of, you know, health and fitness coaches jumping on, you know, their Instagram bio will say that they're a health fitness coach and a mindset coach, when the reality is they have no training specifically or education in mindset exactly. But that said, you know, I've worked with over 300 coaches at this point through my program. And that doesn't mean that every single one of those coaches who came through knew nothing about mindset. The fact of the matter is a lot of them were coming through the program and realizing, oh, cool, like I already kind of do this. Like, it's really cool to see that I can now take that and leverage it and better understand it. They're now more comfortable and confident in their skills around mindset and things of that nature. But anyway, so when it comes to mindset in general and kind of just like where coaches, you're asking where coaches go wrong sometimes. One of the biggest things that comes to mind immediately that I see a lot in like coaches who do go through my program, and it's not necessarily, I hate even using the word wrong, right? Because nobody even realizes that it is quote unquote wrong, or it may be like leading someone down more of like a fixed mindset path, something like that. That's something that I see a lot and is usually like quite a light bulb moment when I do teach this to coaches, is that we shouldn't be immediately as coaches providing solutions to our clients like right off the bat. So it's very, very hard because as a coach, we want to help people. So if we have a client say, this is the example I use all of the time. In fact, I literally spoke on stage about this example last weekend. If we have a client who says, oh, I just like cannot hit my protein targets. You know, it's so hard for me to hit my protein. I don't know what to do. As a coach, what do you do? You know, I asked the audience this question and they were like, oh, you know what? I would look at what they're eating for protein and see if we can like double their portion sizes. Great, great idea, great solution, right? Or someone would say, oh, I would ask them what their favorite protein sources are so we can start to implement that. Or someone else said, oh, I would just send them this list that I have of like all the high protein snacks that I've gathered over the years. I'm like, these are great options, but it's not really great from like a mindset and behavior change perspective, because you're just telling them what to do, which sometimes clients say like, oh, just tell me what to do. But the truth is, it's not going to be really helpful from a behavior change and mindset perspective. Instead, we should try to ask questions, try to help our clients get to a place where they are coming up with solutions on their own or coming up with ideas on their own. And that can just be so much more helpful because you're helping them build this like autonomy and independence and not just feeling like totally reliant on you, right? The more a client is going to feel reliant on you and need you to be successful, the less that they're going to have a growth mindset and the more of a fixed mindset they're going to start to develop, because they will think, you know, this isn't me doing these things. I'm not, you know, figuring stuff out for myself. I'm not learning. I'm just getting everything because I'm working with a health and fitness professional. So the goal would be that we're getting people to this place where they can come up with ideas and solutions and things on their own. It's also really helpful too, because there's always a chance, of course, that this client has already Googled, you know, high protein recipes, high protein snacks, all of these things. So if you go to her and you're like, hey, no big deal, I got you, here's a list of high protein options, she could very well come back and be like, wow, thank you. Like, I Googled that already. Like, do you think I'm stupid? Like, hello. Like, I know that cottage cheese has high protein. Like, thank you. You know, so it could almost come off as like condescending, or that you don't care, or that you're not like hearing your client, when the reality is you were just trying to help. But without asking questions and better understanding the situation and gaining more info, you might run that risk that you just come off looking kind of like not super helpful. So asking the questions, you know, well, what has worked for you in the past when you have hit your protein targets? Or before I provide you with some solutions and some options, do you have any ideas in mind? And just starting the conversation in that way can be so much more beneficial for so many different reasons.
Absolutely. A couple of key things that sort of jumped out for me there is, you know, having the client feel independent. You know, I'm a big fan of an analogy, and you know, it is similar to, like, you know, if you've got a driving instructor, that driving instructor isn't going to be with you all the time, you know. And the fact that they can, I think it comes down to learning. You know, they want to learn as well. And exactly like what you mentioned there, the questions that you're asking the clients, you know, trying to, because one, you know, which I think is really important as a coach, is you're probably going to find out more about them and build up that rapport a little bit and get an understanding of it, you know, because there's no good saying to a client, yeah, just eat steak and chicken. I'm a vegan. I don't really want to eat that, you know, and it's exactly. That conversation side of things. One thing that you mentioned there, you know, finding solutions, because part of me was nodding because I remember doing exactly like what you've said, sending, yeah, just do this. Yep. Whereas actually, do you think, especially maybe coaches who are, you know, just building up that client base and, you know, starting out, do you think sometimes that's where they feel as though they need to provide solutions rather mm-hmm. than, I don't want to say take the risk, but asking those questions and maybe taking a slower approach?
Yeah, honestly, that could be part of what plays into it. So in addition to just generally wanting to help people, right? So we think, oh, you know, they're paying me to be the nutrition and fitness expert. If they are struggling with something, then I just provide a solution. That's what I'm here for, right? I think that's just generally the idea that is out there. But with that said, I could see if you're a newer coach too, you're struggling maybe a little bit with like imposter syndrome. You're not totally fully confident in your coaching skills yet and things like that. That could be a really easy way for you to feel competent and confident and in your skills, right? Oh, this person is struggling with protein. Like, cool, I can actually help them. Like, that makes me feel good. So it is sort of almost like a altruistic benefit for sure, because it makes you feel good in that situation. And you're like, cool, I'm going to feel good. They're going to feel good. This is great. But the reality is it's not always super helpful. And that's not to say, and this is where I had mentioned before, feels like weird to say that they're wrong, and you're not necessarily wrong, right? You could absolutely provide them a list of high protein options, and they may be like, oh my God, thank you. This is great. This is so helpful. I'm so happy that I invested in coaching with you. But you could get that same response still just by starting with some of those other questions. And as you were mentioning too, could build rapport, and you could like learn a little bit more about this person rather than missing something potentially, or missing an opportunity to learn more about your client by just sending them the yeah. list of protein options, right?
Yeah. And as well, you know, some people might actually benefit from that. They might just want ideas, you know, from right. from having that list. Whereas I think, you know, that's few and far between the people that can just, because I don't think anyone's just a case of, yeah, just do this, mm-hmm. and this, and that's easy. You know, there's too many variables that can influence how people yeah. think about things or stick to nutrition or training. And flipping it from away from the coach's side, when clients have, because, you know, I've had clients, and I'm sure you've worked with similar people as well, where they've tried other things in the past, or they're just on probably the most common one is maybe a fat loss mindset. I just need to do this. I just need to lose in fat. Whereas it might get to a point where they just need to maintain, or they need to have that transition of, well, let's go into a little bit of a strength or muscle or anything mm-hmm. like that. And how, especially when clients have tried other things in the past, how does maybe that conversation change? And why do you think clients sometimes just want to focus on one thing rather than thinking, okay, we've done this now, what's the next step?
Yeah. Oh, that could go off. Could go a lot of different directions with this. I think what it's like, this is me putting like my nutrition coach cap on and thinking like, I think a lot of this is just, again, like misinformation, but this time like on the client side of things, right? Where it's just always thinking I need to lose fat and just like perpetually like diet all year round, all of the time, when in reality ends up just being like this like yo-yo dieting that you're doing. You know, a lot of times that looks like for folks, like they're in a diet and then they overeat for a period of time because they can't keep up with the super restrictive practices that they've been doing. And then they go back into another type of restrictive diet just to like get sick of it and unable to keep up with it and start overeating again. Or, you know, the people who are dieting Monday through Friday and just to overeat on the weekends and throw it all off. I think that that is what we see a lot. And of course, mindset plays a role in this, right? Because it's this idea that in order to be successful, in order to lose fat, lose weight, whatever that looks like, I need to be super restrictive. I need to eliminate carbs. I need to eat 1200 calories. I need to do all of these things. And the reality is like, you could do it, so make it so much easier on yourself, make it more sustainable, and it not be a super grueling process. It will probably be more successful with it, right? So some of it, I think, comes from that mindset place. It's just like, it's a fixed mindset about like what you need to be doing in order to be successful. You know, same thing goes on the exercise side of things. It's, I need to be crawling out of the gym and like absolutely demolishing myself in order to see progress, when we know very well that's not true, right? Two-a-days or you're not going to lose weight. Like that's not the case. In fact, like that could actually be hindering your ability to lose weight. Because recovery is obviously a very important thing. So I think for clients, there's like this mix, right, of misinformation or just like misunderstanding on the nutrition and exercise side of things. And then also how their mindset plays a role in that and believing like what needs to happen in order to be successful. So those obviously just kind of like play hand in hand. And we know, you know, when it comes to nutrition and when it comes to training as well, you need to have like a periodized approach. You could not be dieting all year, just like you cannot be like maxing out all of your sets every single day for the entire year. So there needs to be that sort of like flux and flow of like what you're focusing on, what you're doing from a recovery standpoint, both from a dieting and training perspective. And that's sort of like the mindset we need to get people in, right? Is that rest and recovery is productive and that you need a periodized approach. And in order to be successful during my next diet phase, I need to hang out at maintenance for a good period of time. And that's like, that's a mindset shift all in itself, you know, and understanding that that is what needs to happen in order to be successful versus, you know, restriction and Beachbody and Whole 30 and keto and like all of these things, like, oh, if it has a name, then it's going to work. Like that's not, that's not the case, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think, especially now, I think you touched on it, you know, when you mentioned, you know, just Google protein sources, there's so much information out there. You could say, how do I lose 5 kilos of fat in 10 weeks? And something would pop up, something would pop up on there. And it's always that feeling of, our clients always think, well, I need to do this, or they get attached to something when they've maybe had success in the past. But then, you know, that success has slowed down a little bit, and then think, right, I need to then, you know, just pivot to do something else, to then get more progress. And one of the conversations that I'll have with clients is always, what's your why? What's the reason behind why you actually want this? And I've actually lent it out to a couple of clients, actually. Is it Simon Sinek? Is it the book Why? Which I think is, you know, really interesting. And do you think that sometimes why people struggle with mindset is, you know, you've got to scratch away at the surface a little bit more and maybe get down to, you know, what is it actually that you want to be? Is it that you just want to be happy? Is it that you actually just want to be more active and just move a little bit better, be a little bit more out of pain? And why do you think sometimes people struggle to, because most goals are like what I said there, I just want to lose fat, I want to be this percent, whereas actually that can sometimes not be very motivating. There's got to be something, or sometimes something a little bit lower. What's kind of your approach with that? Or is that what you found? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. So what you are speaking to from a psychological perspective is intrinsic motivation. So it's this idea that you are doing something because it makes you feel good. It like serves some personal thing for you versus extrinsic motivation, which is something that is external to you, right? You're doing it for someone else because of something else, because someone told you to, that sort of thing. So again, we kind of like come back to that coaching practice of like, oh, just tell me what to do. But the reality is, if you're doing that, you are an extrinsic motivator as a coach to your clients. And that's not the best way to go about things if you want them to stay motivated long term. So we see time and time again in the research that intrinsic types of motivation are always going to be better for like long-term success and actually keeping up with a change in the long run. So obviously, if you think about it, right, if someone wants to lose fat and their motivator is because they are going to their sister's wedding in 3 months, that's an extrinsic motivator. And sure, it may be helpful for those 3 months, but then after that, you're probably going to lose sight of it entirely, right? Whereas if sure, that wedding is coming up, but intrinsically, this person wants to lose weight because they going to the gym makes them feel their best. They have the more energy, you know, it's their favorite part of the day because they finally get me time away from their kids and things like that. They will probably lose the weight for the wedding, but then they continue to do it over time. Right. Yeah. So whenever I talk about, you know, yeah, like find your why and that sort of thing comes up, it's truly to me, I'm like, okay, that's intrinsic motivation and that's evidence-based. And we know that that's important. And that's not to say that all extrinsic motivators are bad. It actually like falls on pretty complex continuum. So different types of extrinsic motivators can still be like somewhat related to your internal desires or interests or values or whatever. They can be a little bit better than someone, if someone were to like give you a comment like, oh, you need to lose weight. And now you're trying to go to the gym to lose weight based on that person's comment. Like that's kind of the quote unquote bad extrinsic motivation, yeah. But you could, you know, be wanting to lose weight because you have your sister's wedding coming up, but you also really value your health and you feel better and you feel more energized. So that is kind of like not a terrible way to go about things. But all of that being said, this is something that we definitely work very heavily with our clients on. And it is a big part of the certification that I teach coaches too, is to kind of like, hey, shift your perspective of what your responsibility is as a coach. And instead of thinking like, oh, you know, my clients aren't motivated. So like, I don't know why they're paying me, you know, why do they choose to work with me if they're not going to stay motivated, and take the responsibility for that and assume that like, it is your responsibility as a coach to help your clients uncover some of this intrinsic motivation and work them through that using different questions and methods and strategies and things of that nature. And on the client side of things, if you're listening to this and you are yourself trying to like work towards something in your health and fitness journey or in anything in life, really taking some time to really think like, how can I make this more intrinsically motivating? You know, really find some personal enjoyment or interest in it. The more you're able to do that, the more likely you're going to be successful, like point blank.
Yeah. I think it's really when you mentioned there of, you know, if in a certain amount of time you've got your sister's wedding coming up, is that thought of what is going to be that intrinsic motivation? Because everyone always says, oh, I've got an event coming up, I've got a holiday coming up, I've got this or this, whereas that's only short term. And do you think that comes from a culture of that instant satisfaction that, you know, we want it right now, we need to have that now? And what are kind of your thoughts on, because just on a little bit of a tangent, when you're speaking to clients about, okay, so where do you see yourself in a year's time, which is a common question that coaches will ask. And sometimes they seem to struggle. Sometimes clients can struggle to think about, because a year is a long time away. How do you sort of divide that up into chunks towards that, you know, long-term goal of, I'm healthy, I'm happy, I'm fitting in this dress or t-shirt size or whatever it is? How do you sort of kind of build up to that?
Yeah, this is an interesting comment because it is something you see a lot in like the personal development space in general too, where it's like, oh, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years, 1 year, whatever? And just kind of always having that sort of long-term trajectory on like your ideal self, whether that is like a skinnier self or a stronger self or whatever, more wealthy person, whatever it may be, right? Like that works for pretty much any goal in life. And it's interesting because that's what we hear all the time, right? It's like, oh, well, write your goals, your long-term goals on a sticky note and put it on your computer or make it your phone background or whatever. So you're constantly reminded of that very long-term goal, that thing that you want to accomplish, whether it is like losing weight or whatever. But the problem with that is, and what we see in some of the research around like visualization, which is essentially what this is, right? Like visualize like who you're going to be, how you're going to look, how you're going to feel, all of these things. And then, yeah, now write that down on the sticky note and remember it all the time and come back to that and visualize it. What we see from the research on this stuff is that it is really helpful to do that if you just want to feel better in the moment. And you brought this up based on, you know, this idea of instant gratification. Visualization is basically instant gratification. It makes you feel good in the moment, to think like, wow, this is like who I could be and this is what I could achieve. And like, here's all the things that I want to do. It feels good to have that like sense of hope and that like desire to change and like make that decision right then and there. Like, I'm going to do that. You know, that's what I'm going to be in 3 years, 5 years, 1 year, whatever. But you don't really then have a ton of game plan or motivation again to make your way there, right? So what we see from visualization and doing this stuff is that it's great if you want to reduce anxiety, if you want to reduce stress, if you want to reduce like depressive symptoms in the moment. But when it comes to actual long-term behavior change and goal achievement, visualization isn't that great. Could be great, you know, I know athletes use this a lot right before like big games and things like that. And that's okay because it kind of calms you down, brings you into sort of a parasympathetic state going into a very stressful, like sympathetic environment. And that can help you be more successful in that situation. Yes, absolutely. But typically when we're doing this with clients, it's that, yeah, 1 year, 3 years, 5 years down the line, we can't really expect to feel that feeling we feel better in the moment now to be the reason why we lost 30 pounds a year from today. So really what is more helpful here is something called mental contrasting. This is an evidence-based approach in psychology, and it's taking visualization and making it a little bit more practical and realistic. So what we're doing with this is like, sure, visualize that outcome that you want, but then we also need to be visualizing just as much, if not more so, all of the barriers and challenges and difficult things that are going to come up on the way there, and start to make a game plan of how we're going to work through those things. In addition to, you know, figuring out, okay, step by step, like reverse engineer this process of what you were saying, you know, take that year and divide it up into chunks and like, okay, so by this month, I would like to be doing this, by this month, I'd like to be doing that, and having some more of what they call sub goals on the way to your goal, instead of just only solely focusing on that big long-term outcome. Because again, it'll make you feel good in the moment, but it doesn't necessarily set you up for success as far as like action steps in a game plan.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting that you said there, you know, because everyone always thinks about the end goal or the short goal in terms of that. But when you mentioned there, you know, having a game plan in terms of obstacles and challenges, because there will be things coming up. You know, I always like to say you're going to get thrown a curveball. Sometimes it isn't going to be expected. Traveling with work, family, relationships, whatever it may be. Where does, because another phrase that clients will say, or you hear the phrase, you know, self-sabotage, is that actually a thing, or is that just not having a game plan to take into account the obstacles and challenges that are coming up?
Yeah, so I think in my professional opinion, self-sabotage is sort of like the umbrella definition for a lot of different things, right? I actually have, we could put this in the show notes if you're up for it, but I have a free 5-day self-sabotage workshop series, right, that I give to people. So I call it self-sabotage, but mostly calling it that is not from like a researcher academic perspective, right? It's because that's the word that people use to describe these things, whether it is fixed mindset, whether it is like bad habits, whether it is like lack of self-control, or like any of a number of these different things, lack of a game plan, using visualization instead of mental contrasting, whatever it is, like all of that can play a role into your self-sabotaging behaviors. So to me, self-sabotaging is essentially just doing the things that are not congruent with your goals, and essentially making the decision to not pursue a goal-directed behavior and do something else instead, right? So it is maybe somewhat conscious, maybe a little bit more subconscious, but it's you getting in your own way, essentially, right? And this could look like a number of different things. Again, fixed mindset, maybe you don't know how to cope with your stress. Maybe you're having a hard time figuring out how to make your way from that big long-term goal and break it up into small chunks, whatever. But if you're getting your own way, you're self-sabotaging. So that's essentially how I see it.
Yeah, it comes back to, because two things that you mentioned there, you know, you're not sure how to cope with stress or an understanding, comes back to those conversations that you're going to have with your coach, you know. And it's like with anything, it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but repetition, right? Let's go through this again. Let's see, you know, why we're aiming for this. With that as well, then, alongside self-sabotage, is that sort of, especially when clients are progressing from sort of like beginners to novices, you know, beginners to novices, beginners to intermediates and progressing through from there, that sort of fear of failure or success of, you know, actually they're climbing up the rungs a little bit and, you know, feeling as though they are progressing and feel like, oh, okay, I'm happy here now. I'm just gonna stay here rather than thinking, do you know what? Actually, you could progress from a regional powerlifting competition to a national powerlifting competition. You could, you know, put a little bit more muscle on or whatever it may be. What sort of, is that a similar sort of mindset when it comes to the self-sabotage things as well, them getting in their own way?
Yeah, that's interesting. So what you're essentially explaining is this idea that like, once you start to make progress, you may start to realize like, okay, like I've made progress, I've started to get here, but like, if I continue to push further and try to get to that next level, then I'm scared because I kind of like face failure at that point, right? You know, so it's like, you've started to kind of like prove to yourself that you can do some things, but taking it to the next level is riskier. So it's a little bit more like, oh, I don't want to do it. And maybe I'm just comfy here now, you know, like this feels good enough. I don't know if I want to continue to like extend myself in that direction. Which is an interesting phenomenon for sure, because you would think, oh, well, once you've started to gain this like momentum and confidence, don't you want to keep going? But it is true that even people who haven't seen some success and have started to be successful, they're like, okay, I did it. But now, you know, that next level is going to require more from me, or going to require a different type of skill that I don't have yet, and all of these things. And it becomes very easy to just like stay comfortable. But there's a saying that I always lean on, and it's discomfort breeds growth. And that is like in every sense of the word, works for strength training. It works for any type of like personal development, anything. If you want to continue to grow, you're going to experience some form of discomfort, whether it's like underneath the bar or just like pressure in your life. Right. So with that said, I think that's where, yeah, like having a coach can be really helpful, or just like having a lot of self-awareness and understanding, like, because on one hand, sure, maybe it is that like you're happy where you're at, you can maintain there, and you don't necessarily want a whole ton more muscle mass, or like you're good with not like progressing to the next thing. And that if you can get real with yourself and be like, yeah, I accomplished essentially what I wanted to do and be here, then fine. But you also have to make sure that that's the truth. Otherwise, you're going to constantly feel like you're not serving what you actually are looking for, right? Or the second option here would be like, no, you are holding yourself back, right? There is more that you can do, and you're just like scared of failure, which in some sense can be indicative of having a fixed mindset. People who have a fixed mindset at the very like basic definition just don't believe that they are capable of doing something, of improving some way, of changing in some capacity, whether they really realize it or not. That is the core belief of a fixed mindset. So in this case, it could be, I don't really know if I can move to that next level or do that next thing without potentially failing. So I'm just not going to do anything at all, because it's much easier and much more comfortable to just stay where I am now instead of running the risk of potentially like failing or running into a setback or something like that if I were to try to do more. So that can be like a wake-up call for people sometimes too, to realize like, oh, so I have somewhat of a fixed mindset because I'm like realizing that it's not worth the risk of failure to like move on to the next thing, which can be really eye-opening. And the first step to starting to like work on that and to change that is to see it and be aware of it and understand it. So if you're listening to this and you're like, ah, oh, shit, that's me. That's me in whatever capacity of my life. The next step for you would be like, okay, so what do we need to do to reframe that and think of this as an opportunity to grow? And even if you do fail or have a setback or run into an issue, like all it is more opportunity to get better and to improve and to continue pushing on. Like having some form of failure doesn't mean that you will continue to fail. You know, it just may mean that it gives you the information that you need to do the thing that will make you successful.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that was a really good explanation of that, and it kind of tied everything together that we've mentioned about, you know, from the start, in terms of, you know, because a lot of people, you know, I do believe that people can be or should have a little bit more confidence in their own abilities. I think people can be surprised at what they can achieve when everything that we've spoken about, the tools that we're using and aiming to change their mindset. And then, you know, having those conversations like what we've mentioned and being, you know, am I actually happy here? Do I want to just stay at this for a little bit, which is fine. And then, you know, later down the line, you know, progress from there, rather than, you know, what some people do or what some people have done in the past, had some success or pushed too hard, then fallen off, and pushed too hard again, and then fallen off. So quite a lot of topics and tangents thrown in there. The last question that I like to ask, whether from a coach's point of view or a client's point of view, from everything that we've chatted about there, what would be your take-home points or words of wisdom?
I would say, kind of tying into what we were just talking about, because I think that that's such like a cornerstone of a growth mindset, and having a growth mindset is really going to be your ticket to success in a lot of things, right? Is seeing setbacks and failures as nothing but like opportunity to learn and to grow and to develop. And it's much easier said than done. And I understand that, but the more you can like lean into like those riskier situations where you might be facing failure, like that's really where you're going to develop and like see the most of yourself and get the most out of it and be the most like, it's their closest thing that you can do to guarantee success is to literally lean into those things that are a little bit riskier and propose failure. And then seeing, even if you do fail, seeing that is like, okay, cool. I just need to reroute. You know, I need a different strategy. I need to find a different resource. I need to find a different mentor. I need to do something differently. It doesn't necessarily mean you failed for life because you failed one time, right? It just honestly gave you the information that you need to potentially not fail the next time. So seeing it in that light instead, that would be sort of like my main take-home message, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good take-home message. I always liken it to the very first coach I had when I was playing rugby. You always learn more from a defeat than you do a win. And as well, that I always like to use that phrase of, in 5 years' time, are you going to look back and think, I'm really glad that I worked myself into the ground and now I'm, you know, got lower back pain or whatever else. You know, give it a go. You know, the worst thing is at least you tried. It's that worst feeling of, you know, and always thinking, oh, well, I could have done it.
Yeah. What if, right? Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Whereas at least then I always think it is that thing of, I know I'm like that. You've got to scratch that itch. You've got to, you need that closure, if you like, of, oh, well, what could it have been? Thanks a lot, Casey, for taking the time to jump on. Really, really enjoyed chatting and picking your brains today. If anyone's got any questions about what we've chatted about today, see the content that you put out there with the courses that you've mentioned there as well, which we can put in the show notes as well. Where can people find you or reach out and contact you?
Yeah, definitely. So as far as social media goes and free content, I would definitely head over to my Instagram. I'm trying to get into the world of TikTok, but I would not maybe recommend checking it out just yet. So, but on Instagram, I'm Coach Casey Joe over there. It's Coach with a C and Casey with a K and Joe without an E. And then you can find all of my courses, free content, paid content, all of that good stuff at my website. And that's kjocoaching.com.
Awesome. 100%. If you haven't had a look at what the content that Casey's putting out there, 100% check the content that she's putting out. Thanks a lot for taking the time to jump on. Thanks a lot to everyone listening, and I will see you all next week.